out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 27th of March, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, as it's Wednesday, I'm very pleased to say we have a special guest with us. We have Carolyn Yeager from carolynyeager.net. Carolyn, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, Sven.
That's good to hear. That's very good to hear. And I think we've got a really interesting article to get into today. You sent it to me last night, and there was just so much I think that we could discuss about this. But to start off with, I mean, it's just really, really shocking, and that comes across in the main title, really. I mean, it's basically Jews trying to steal the pensions from war veterans. I mean, the title is "Audits to Expose Ex-SS Veterans and Collaborators Worldwide Still Being Paid Pensions by Germany Have Been Demanded by the Central Council of Jews in Berlin." I mean, just how much power do these Jews have that they can just demand the government to do this? What do you think of this?
Yeah, that's what gets me the most. It just shocks me. They talk about anti-Semitism, but my God, the way they behave, and particularly when you're dealing with Germany, it doesn't have to be in Germany, but anything to do with Germany, they want to dictate completely and totally what can be done, and you have to be they want Germany to be punishing anything to do with National Socialism or that period of time, terribly, you know, and not, they don't get anything, but the Jews want everything. They keep demanding more money. And just so, and then they say, well, why do they have this terrible hatred against Jews? Oh, just so meaning, it just has no purpose, you know, there's no reason for it. Well, what, you know, here you have people who fought in a war, and then they not only the veterans that are still alive, and these are not even Germans. These are other European nations who joined to help Germany, you know, in the Waffen-SS groups, and they're widows, you know. Oh, when they take that money away from them, they can't get that money, but every Jew in the world who was lived in the territory of Europe during that time, which they want to say a Holocaust took place. Well, they get a monthly payment from Germany still today, and it's very generous. I mean, you don't have to prove any kind of suffering or anything. You just have to have been a Jew in that location. That's all. Period. And you get all this money. It just makes me sick, you know. It's so petty and small and hateful.
It's vindictive. It's vindictive. That's what it is. Really, really vindictive. And you think, you know, these weren't even people that fought in the war. These were people that were kept safe in the camps. They didn't really take part in it. And the brave people that did fight against the communists to try and keep the communists out of their countries in East Europe, they want to steal their pensions from them. They want them to be homeless, begging on the street. Jewish Council President Joseph Schuster told the New Osnabrücker Zeitung newspaper Monday that German authorities had a responsibility towards Holocaust victims to trace remaining ex-Nazi pension recipients and take conclusive steps. So they're saying this is a responsibility towards Jews, that they must take the money off of these Germans, even though they have given the money to these so-called Holocaust victims. Who is this Joseph Schuster to be telling them that, to be ordering them about like this, Carolyn? Do you know?
Well, yeah, he's the new, you know, was that horrible woman. I wish I had thought about that. I would have refreshed myself on her name because she's pretty well known, but she used to be the Jewish Council president. Now it's just Joseph Schuster. He's taken over. And, you know, if they want that job, they have to be very activist. They have to be aggressive. They have to go after everything. That's the whole policy of the Jews everywhere, in their organizations. So whatever comes up, and you know, this stuff, this was printed in Deutsche Welle, but a lot of these things that the Jews are screaming about, are printed only mostly in the Jewish newspapers. The Jewish press, Jewish news, and only once in a while is it meaningful, does it, you know, make its way into the mainstream press. So if you follow Jewish press, which I don't, but I belong to something that somebody does and posts it all there, you'd think that this was constantly in the news, you know, all these things that the Jews are demanding. But they're not, you know, they're not really. And it's just that Jews tell their own people, oh, look at this, what's happening, you know, look, we need to do something. And they want to appear, their leaders want to appear first to be very aggressive and activist to the regular Jews. And they also want to play all this up like it's so important to keep them all worked up about it. So here you have Joseph Schuster just doing his job as Jewish Council, the German, in Germany, Jewish Council president. And he gets utter respect because, of course, it's Germany, and that's how Germans have to be. And the German government has said that they don't have a way to tell who did what in the war. They just have lists of veterans. And they had passed a law back in somewhere in the 1950s, I believe it was, yeah, 1950s, to give this pension to all the German soldiers who were injured or had some kind of claim, you know, as a veteran, because they have, this is part of the German, the whole German policy that they do. So all these, so people on the list, some of them were in, you know, in the Netherlands, in France, in Belgium, and Norway, I guess, different places where these groups, where they volunteered from. And so this money's been going to them. And, you know, it's not, it says here there's a number 2,000. 2,000, Sven. They're all elderly, of course, now. And it includes the soldiers' widows, the soldiers who are already deceased, you know, their widows, 2,000 of them. And this is unbearable to Joseph Schuster, he says. This is unbearable to us poor Holocaust victims that these 2,000 elderly people and widows are getting this money. And it's not like a lot of money, you know, it's something kind of, you know, reasonable, not great, $300 a month or something like that in dollar terms. but, you know, they can't stand it. And this just sets me off when I read stuff like this.
I'm not surprised. I mean, it really gets me because what they say, oh, they have a responsibility towards Holocaust victims. And you would think, well, Are the Holocaust victims asking for more money? Is that what it is? They want some more money that they haven't got enough? But no, they want to steal it from somebody else. They think that that is what the German responsibility towards them is. is to fulfill their vendetta, fulfill their vindictiveness, their desire for revenge. You know, it's an entirely negative thing that they're asking for. That's what really gets me about it. And they want the people that fought for Germany, they want them to be homeless beggars. They want to take that's that the money thing. From
that,
them.
That's what they want. I don't think they care about the money. They're not. They wouldn't get that much money. They're going to get the money they demand anyway for the Holocaust victims. But they don't want these. Every time anything about a Nazi comes up, if he's not already arrested and made into a put in jail and made into a criminal, they demand that be done. That's what they want. They don't want, they can't stand, or they just do it for publicity, that there are still people who were supportive of the National Socialist Third Reich and fought in the war that are getting away with it, you know, that are still free. And not only free, but they're getting a little pension. That just kills them.
You know, they fought in a war. Why shouldn't they? You know, if you fought in a war, and also you've got agreements here as well. Don't forget that you've got people in other countries, not Germany, that signed up, and part of their agreement for signing up was that if they got injured, they would get some form of compensation. They would get a pension, and this was a country that was guaranteeing that, a sovereign nation that was guaranteeing that, and they want to take that. They want to take that away from them. And continuing here. It says Nazi-era perpetrators, excluded since the 1998 law amendment, still received an average €330, $370, that's all, monthly, and cost coverage for the use of specialist healthcare facilities, reported the NOZ, saying the cohort included one-time collaborators in former Nazi-occupied countries who joined Hitler's notorious SS and were wounded in action. Echoing recent reports about former SS members in the Netherlands, Dutch European parliamentarian Paul Tang told NOZ he had written to European Commissioner President Jean-Claude Juncker urging fresh investigations. So these are people that have been injured, and these are people from what they call the Nazi-occupied countries. Now, they joined up with the SS purely to fight in the East. I'm thinking of the Baltic nations here and the legionaries that they had. And that was purely to defend their nations from the communists. They were absolved of all crimes, of taking part in the so-called Holocaust at Nuremberg. And they still want to take their money off them just for fighting against the communists. That's,
you know. Well, of course, they like the communists. I mean, the Jews were all in favor of the communists back then. And they have to make out, since we were allies, our Western nations were allied with Russia, with Soviet Union, we have to make out that somehow at that time, the communists and the Soviets were okay. The Red Army was okay. They were good. They were our friends. And they were fighting against these evil, the evil Hitler, who was Holocausting Jews, who was putting Jews in concentration camps and exterminating them. So this, and then suddenly later, which there's, you know, after the war, everything shifted around and we recognized that communism is harmful to us. And the Germans, we got the Germans on our side. And there's another thing I was going to talk about after we get done with this. Which is about that. It's part of a book that was mentioned at the end of this article. So, you know, it's this thing where none of it makes sense. We're in Alice in Wonderland world. This is what this whole period, amounts to. It's just a bunch of lies put by people who are making war for various reasons. On one another, on their own race, and then covering it up with all these lies that help the Jews get all the control of the situation that they've got. Because, you know, the problem I have with this, and that I think is not fully recognized, is that, well, the Allies, particularly the Americans and the British, wanted to destroy Adolf Hitler in Germany. They wanted to destroy Germany in World War I, and they didn't, and they did. But then the as I've said, like to say, Adolf Hitler brought Germany back from the dead, and they hadn't counted on that. And so they watched it happening, and finally they said, no, this guy's doing too much, and we've got to go after him again. It wasn't really Hitler. It wasn't really Nazis. It was Germany. You know, the strength of Germany, and Germany wasn't willing to go along with the rest of the Western establishment the way they wanted him to. That's the thing. It's a good thing about the Germans is they even today, I think there's a lot of Germans who still have that independent streak and that sense and that good sense that they won't fit into that. Well, anyway, there were others who wanted to join with them too, from all the other countries, and they did that through the SS. So the other thing I'd like to say here is that, you know, they notorious SS, they called it, and you know, there's like no way to look at the SS in the media except pure evil, and yet the SS was the finest example of what Germany could produce after the Wehrmacht. I mean, the Wehrmacht was great, but the SS was even greater. And when you see these pictures of people in the SS, they're so impressive. And that's why the mystique, you might say, or the appeal of Nazism continues to this day and all over the world. Because all you have to do is see the photographs from back then, and you see the SS, and then you see sometimes the Wehrmacht and their officers. One of my favorite pictures is the Wehrmacht officers and some troops who had successfully subdued Greece in 1942, and before the Russian invasion, and they're up on that Mount Olympus, is it? Where the Parthenon is. And they're walking around, they have their German flag, and you see the Parthenon in the background and all. And I mean, they look absolutely beautiful. They look like they should be there. They look like very fitting. Not, of course, they wouldn't to Greeks, but they do to me. Because they're so tall and handsome, and they didn't. Well, anyway, I'll leave it at that. So there's another discordant note there that they want to make this out as evil, which actually was good, and a lot of people recognize it as good and just won't go along with that story.
They were modern-day knights, weren't they? They followed the same chivalric codes of old, highly, highly moral people, and they're the main ones that they go after. And continuing with what it says here, responding in February to a left party question in the Bundestag Parliament, the German government argued that it was difficult to identify war criminals since pension documents did not include information on what the pensioners did or did not do during the war. Since 1998, the Act's Article 1A proscribes intensive checks and denial of payment if the would-be beneficiary or widowed partner's conduct had violated the principles of humanity or the rule of law. And it says here, for example, through voluntary SS membership. And through voluntary SS membership, which was to defend those countries against communism. And it was only because of these brave Waffen SS defending against the Red Army that so many people were actually able to get out. So many refugees were able to get out from Latvia, from Lithuania, from Estonia, mm-hmm. towards the end of the war. I mean, they are honoured as heroes today. The EU won't let them have a proper bank holiday, proper public holiday on that day, but all their politicians still come out to honour the people that laid down their lives at the end of the war, and they're trying to steal their pensions. It's sick. Mm-hmm. Really sick.
It is. It is sick, right?
In late 2016, two historians with the Simon Wiesenthal Center, in a report commissioned by the German Labour Ministry, found that Law Article 1A amendment had since resulted in only 99 pension cancellations. That's what they're furious about. Only 99 people have been turned into beggars. Reacting in 2016, Christoph Huebner of the International Auschwitz Committee told Daily Taz that the inaction was disgraceful, given the coldness and arrogant distance with which many National Socialist victims were refused pensions at the beginning, meaning shortly after World War II. And that is really twisted, considering the amount of money that they get now. And why should they give people that didn't fight in the war pensions? And that's that, you know, what do you know much about this bit here, Carolyn, that these Jews were denied pensions at the beginning? That's what he's trying to infer here, that the Jews just haven't, you know, they weren't given any money, which they should have been at the end of the war. Do you know anything about that? Or is that not something you've looked into?
No. Well, what if he's it could be that that they were more specific or more restrictive about who got a pension. If this is a part of the what's the word for that?
It's the Auschwitz Committee moaning.
Yeah, but the money that was agreed to give to all the Holocaust victims, if this, or is he just talking about people who were interned in Auschwitz?
I think that's probably
what I don't know what he's talking about here, but you know, this International Auschwitz Committee is a bunch of communists. I mean, it was the Russians who formed that, and the communists who took over there at Auschwitz when it was quote unquote liberated, and they still are. And I know that the committee, the Buchenwald committee that runs the Buchenwald former camp and the memorial there, they're still in control of it. They're all communists. The Buchenwald actually had a lot of communists interned there. And when it was liberated, they took over, you know, these former inmates, and they were mean as can be. And the same thing with Auschwitz. They're all left-wing people who affiliate themselves with that. And so whatever they say doesn't really mean a darn thing. They're going to say it, but I don't know anything about that. I kind of forgot that part of it. I must have just passed it over. Because I'm just thinking about Simon Wiesenthal. You know, they have something to say about everything that comes up. And just think about who Simon Wiesenthal was. And compared to what I was saying about the officers and troops in the Wehrmacht and the SS and how handsome and appealing they were. And then you see people like Simon Wiesenthal, a little midget freak. You know, I'm sorry. I shouldn't, you know, you're not supposed to talk that way. But, you know, he certainly has, he looks as deformed as his mind is. You know, he just has no appeal whatsoever. But we're supposed to listen to him, and he's supposed to be the one who's saying what's good and what's not good and what should be done. It just doesn't make any sense, does it? It's backwards. We're supposed to love the a deformed-minded person like Simon Wiesenthal, a liar, proven liar, and hate the ones that he hates.
Form and function are intimately connected, aren't they, in nature? You know,
seems sort of like it.
Beauty of the body should imply beauty of the mind. There's one final quote that I found here, which was actually on another article, and I found this interesting, because they basically say Social Security is independent of criminal procedures. The historian Martin Gollnitz of Mainz's Johann Gutenberg University said that many of the collaborators may have slipped through a loophole because Waffen-SS military combat members in occupied Europe were under orders from the German military, the Wehrmacht, during the war. This meant they counted not as members of the NSDAP, but as servants of the German Reich, he told DW. Therefore, some relatives of the Waffen-SS would also be entitled to a pension. Gollnitz also doubted that much could be done now to change the situation. German social security law is partly based on the principle that such claims are considered independent of criminal procedures. It would also be problematic to name their names because we don't know concretely, for example, with the Belgians, whether they were really involved in any war crimes, he said. Each individual case would have to be checked, and the government struggles with that. The bit that really got me about that is it's like saying if somebody has been somebody's done something wrong in society, they should have all their benefits taken away from them. You know, that's why it's kept separate. That's why social security law is kept separate from criminal procedures, because it would mean, you know, if somebody had got into trouble for shoplifting or whatever, they would never get any benefits ever again, which would just encourage them to commit more crimes.
More.
You can't just take people's money off because of, you know, arbitrary things just because the Jews say so. I mean, that goes right against, you know, real fundamentals of law there that they are trying to overturn.
This is good because, you know, what the Jews do, they don't care about law or anything, you know, German traditional law. The impression I got was that Germany wasn't going to do anything about this, no matter even if they are demanding it. Because, and I read something similar to this, it wasn't Martin Gollnitz mentioned, but something similar to it, that it was complicated. And that according to their laws, you know, that these people, they qualified for this legally. And that's just the way the German law was. And they didn't, and just for 2,000 people, you know, it's not worth changing everything. They wouldn't do it. So that made me feel better. But that's the thing with the Jews. They don't care about that. They think what they do is they come up with this moral argument, oh, that, you know, that they've pushed on everyone, and they and that stupid German government accepted it, you know, as constitutionally and everything in their law, and so they're stuck with it, but they were forced to also by, in order to get, you know, get any kind of freedom to be somewhat sort of sovereign. So this is but the Jews ignore all that. And they're legal people, but they use the law when they want to, and they ignore the law when they want to. They're just arbitrary and hateful. So this is good news that at least Germany holds the line on things when they go too far. Similarly, when Poland is demanding reparations from Germany. And then now Greece has also got into demanding reparations. And present Germany has been holding the line there strongly, saying, no, this was all taken care of, you know, before we agreed to this. You can't bring this up again. And this is not, they do not intend to give in to any of that. And I sure hope they don't. So sometimes they still have some integrity.
Well, that's
and they stand up for their own country and people sometimes, to some degree. At the end of that DW article, interestingly, they mentioned two books that I think that's where it was. And I thought these books made a good contrast, which would be a good way to end this. The first book was Kriegsverbrecher Lobby. It translates as War Criminals Lobby, by a mainstream establishment, you know, historian, German, Felix Bohr, which tells how after the 1950s, from the 1950s on, after the war, only a handful of German war criminals were imprisoned, and how death sentences were then turned into life sentences. So he writes it kind of, you know, from the Jews' point of view, that most of these German that he calls war criminals, you know, they call them war criminals. They were soldiers. Not enough of them were imprisoned. And then in 1950s, Germany abolished the death penalty in Germany, and then those death sentences that had been given were turned into life sentences, and you know, he was like sympathizing against this, like these people weren't punished properly. But then the other book, it has a different point of view, very interesting, called Das Braune Netz, had translated the Brown Network. So this is, you know, the Nazis after the war, and it's written by a guy named Winkler, who said, another German, who writes that the post-war former Nazis that were quote-unquote anti-Semites, you know, when they were Nazis, they were anti-Semites, but after the war, they redefined themselves as anti-communists. Well, they actually became anti, you know, they decided to help their country as and fight against the communists, which is what the fight turned into. And so the person writing this about it said they made post-war careers, for example, in West Germany's Cold War era intelligence services, and, quote, helped lead the country to success. This meaning Germany. They let, you know, they were still patriots. They, you know, whatever their country needed, they couldn't be national socialists anymore. So they became anti-communists and fought against the Soviet Union and helped Germany survive and bring forth the economic boom after the war, which it says here culminated in reunification in 1889. But then there's an interesting sentence which gives cause for thought. It says, as willingly as they served the Brown ideology, so were they committed now to stand up for democracy. The young nation thus regained political freedom of action, but based its success on a moral contradiction that could not be resolved, that democracy, he writes that moral contradiction as democracy was built, helped by its enemies. That is, Germany's one-time enemies were the Nazis, or the National Socialists, or the Hitlerites, and but then it was the democracy was saved later by those same people, which is an interesting thing to consider, just how the meanings and who's the enemy and so on is switched around, and yeah, it makes people believe that one thing is bad and evil, another thing is good, but then later it's the Soviet Union was good when Hitler was there. But now that when Hitler was gone, it became bad, and vice versa with the German people. So I thought that was a very good thing that Winkler did there in writing this book.
Shocking that they call the Germans the enemies of Germany at the end there. And just what we were saying about, you know, they seem to class all the actions of Germany during the war as illegal. Just recently, they've been talking about the Great Escape film and the fact that 50 of these British prisoners of war, they escaped and they were executed afterwards. And they report that on the BBC as Hitler murdered these 50 people. They were all murdered on Hitler's orders. Well, no, they can't have been. They were in a prisoner of war camp and they escaped. So it's the death penalty for escape is quite lawful and quite legal, and yet it's reported on as oh that was Hitler murdering them. It's shocking.
Yeah, well, after the war at the Nuremberg Tribunal, they managed to criminalize everything that was done before by Germany under Hitler, and it was not criminal at the time it was done. That's one of those things. You know, they had all these rules of. The British did the same thing. You know, if you escaped, you were going to be shot if they could shoot you. And they took their chances with that. Or you're going to be executed if you were discovered. I mean, those things happened everywhere. But suddenly now, you know, they only talk about them in relation to Germany. And it became a criminal thing to do. So, you know, when they can criminalize an organization like the SS, and they can criminalize the National Socialist Political Party, the NSDAP, they didn't criminalize the Wehrmacht. That would have been really crazy. and they refrained from doing that. But they still executed its top officers because they worked with Adolf Hitler, I guess. I don't know if they were members of, I don't think they could have been members of the NSDAP, but they were Hitler's top aides, so the two that they executed.
They fought back. They defended themselves. They dared to defend themselves when they were attacked, basically. But even though, you know, even if they have now been classed as criminals, they still can't take their social security payments from them. You cannot, you know, say somebody's broken the law, so therefore no more social security payments. I mean, that's just twisted and sick. And I hope it doesn't happen. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Carolyn. That was a great episode. I think our listeners are going to enjoy that. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
Radio Aryan. Radio. Dot.